The rabbi told a very perplexing story to his followers. He said there was a man who had great wealth and great holdings all over the world. And by the way, when I created this sermon a couple of years ago, I would say, you know, kind of a Donald Trump character. I've edited that part out, as you might understand. So maybe a Bill Gates type person, you know, that had a lot of stuff and needed someone to manage his affairs. And the word was getting around that this manager was embezzling the money of Mr. Gates in this case. And so he came back from one of his world travels and he called him in and he said, look, you know, here's the word I'm getting. I'm going to be checking the books, and if indeed you have been cheating me, you're going to be out of a job. You're going to be fired. And so the man began to scramble, because indeed he had been cheating his boss. And he thought to himself, you know what? I'm too old to dig ditches, and I'm too proud to beg. I'm going to have to do something. I know what I'll do. I'm going to call people in, and I'm going to start cutting some deals. And then, when I'm fired, they'll be beholden to me, and possibly they might even hire me because they'll be kindly disposed. So he called in the first person and said, what do you owe? He said, well, it's 100 barrels of olive oil. He said, you know, pay for 50 and we're good. Called in the next guy. What is it that you owe? He said, oh, it was 100 bushels of wheat. He goes, let's make it 80 and we're good to go. And on it went. Until finally, the investigation was finished and he did lose his job. Well, the rabbi surprised his followers with the moral of the story when he praised this dishonest manager. And he said, pay attention, for the people of this world are more shrewd than the people of the light. Now, I want to tell you about some of the work we're doing with the Texas Unitarian Universalist Justice Ministry. One of our major issues is immigration and refugee justice and rights. Now, I want you to ask yourself the question as I'm saying this, why is it that the conditions exist for what I'm getting ready to tell you to be okay, to be defensible, for people to actually make their living doing this? Are you aware that in South Texas, in Karnes City and Dilley, we have two major for-profit prisons that are imprisoning women and their children from Central America who are coming here for asylum? Now, asylum is an international treaty that all nations have, that if someone comes to your border and says, I am experiencing violence, I'm afraid for my life, or maybe I'm in a political situation, by treaty, all nations are required to at least give that person a hearing. And furthermore, our government has quotas with these for-profit prisons of the amount of people that they are guaranteed to be locked up. So, a federal judge about a year and a half ago said, it is unconstitutional for you to lock up children in prisons. And so, do you know what the ingenious solution was from the state of Texas and ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency? Oh, we will license these for-profit prisons as child care facilities. And we have, and many people of good conscience have testified at least 3 times and done rallies at the ICE office in San Antonio, done rallies down at Carnes City outside of this prison. By the way, you know what they call them? Residential centers. How many residential centers have you been in where there's barbed wire everywhere, where you have to go through metal detectors to get in, you're wearing jumpsuits? Anybody want to sign up for that residential center? And so, I have heard at least 100 people testify. People of faith, lawyers, social workers, psychologists, child care providers. In these 3 different times that we testified, I didn't hear a single one of them say that this was a good thing, that this should be affirmed as a child care facility, a licensed child care facility in the state of Texas. And yet, our governor and his office and the Health and Human Services of Texas have licensed these for-profit prisons as child care facilities. Now, my question is, what is the climate that has been created that this is okay? That I can look into the eye of someone who works for GEO Group. GEO Group owns that prison down in Carnes. GEO Group is the largest incarcerator of people throughout the entire world. Just go look it up. Put GEO Group into your search engine. And they proudly say on their website, on the front page, GEO Group is the largest, corporation for, I don't know what their euphemisms are, but basically to put people in prison. So we are having a rude awakening in our country regarding the ethics and the morals of our people. But I'm telling you, it's time for a shrewd awakening. Now, I want to take you back in a short history lesson of how we got to this place. Does anybody, I think there's a few people, I surmise by the color of the hair and or lack of same in this room, there were some people around during the Johnson-Goldwater election, am I right? How many voted in that election? See, there's a few of you that are there. What was the result of that election? It was one of the biggest landslides, if not the biggest landslide, in electoral politics in the United States. And there were some men named Richard Viguerie and Paul Weyrich who said, this is not going to happen again. And they started a strategy to galvanize and to actually shift the political and moral and ethical framework and culture of America. And their initial and biggest victory was the election of Ronald Reagan. So it took a long time to hatch their plan. How many of you get direct mail, get your mailbox inundated with mail from political candidates? They're the ones who pioneered that. You can thank Richard Viguerie and Paul Weyrich for that. Are you aware that there are 1,600 so-called Christian radio stations? They're not really Christian because they're basically just right-wing talking machines. And then coming out of that evolved the right-wing AM talk radio, and then coming that out of that evolved Fox News and outlets like that. So they had a messaging apparatus. So why is it that my buddy out in California, whose brother listens to this kind of stuff, And my family in North Carolina had the same talking points on whatever the issue may be. They're not talking on the phone, but they have been expertly tutored. Now, here may be the most important thing that they did. It's the most ingenious and yet the most diabolical. They decided they would incorporate a sect of the Christian church into their political party. Paul Weyrich came up with a term called the moral majority. Remember that? I bet some of you in here had that bumper sticker that said, "The moral majority is neither." And they recruited a man named Jerry Falwell from Lynchburg, Virginia, which is about 60 miles from where I grew up, to be the face of this movement and to basically incorporate these kinds of congregations into their political machine. And that's how that they elected, first of all, Mr. Reagan, and then several other successive candidates, and began to shift the whole culture and the consciousness and the conscience of our nation to where you could lock up children and their mothers who have been traumatized in Central America, a lot of which we've been mucking around in their governments for eons and destabilizing and overthrowing democratically elected leaders if they don't kowtow to what we want them to do. And yet when these women and their children come here for comfort, come here for help, instead of hospitality, we offer incarceration. And I could look people in the eye that worked, when I testified, we went down to Carnes, and we met in the GEO group little trailer. That's where we had our hearings. And I could look into the eyes of these people who are making money, who are executives of the GEO group. And I looked them in the eye and I said, "Can any of you honestly tell me that you would put your child in this prison and have prison guards who are barely even trained to be prison guards be the child care facilitators for your children? If you can look me in the eye and say that, then it's okay." Well, they're all looking down. They're all looking down. Because they flat know, but yet there has been a culture that has been created that says things like that are okay. Now, what happened in liberal and progressive groups, and particularly congregations, during this whole sweep of time from Mr. Reagan's election on up, even till this day, is that progressive congregations basically went into a bunker mentality. Not just Unitarian Universalists, but of all faiths. And I've been privileged to travel this state since 1996, all around, even before I was directing the Justice Ministry, preaching everywhere in UU congregations. And what I would hear were two things. Why am I a Unitarian Universalist? I want to be around people of like mind, and I want to have a safe harbor. Now, you know what that is? That's the starting point. That is not the end all of who we are as Unitarian. That is only the starting point. Of course, we want to be around like-minded people. Of course, we want a safe place to be. But that is not the reason that our congregations exist. That is not the nature of our faith. So I want to tell you about your and our spiritual DNA. I want to tell you about four people that will show you clearly about what our DNA is. I want to take you back to England, back into the late 1700s, there was a man named John Murray. He was a Calvinist preacher. There was a man named James Relly who wrote a book called Union. It was a book about universalism, about that every soul would eventually be saved. And John Murray read that book and he converted. He became a universalist. He committed his life to preaching a different gospel, a gospel of universalism. But then tragedy befell him and his family. His oldest and only son died. And then, essentially, about a year later, his wife died of a broken heart. And all he incurred a lot of debts. He was thrown into a debtor's prison. And when he finally got out of that debtor's prison, he was a man absolutely broken and in despair. In fact, he said, I'm getting out of this place. I'm going to the new world. I'm going to get on a ship. And all I want to do is just disappear. And furthermore, I will not be preaching anything. I will not be preaching universalism. I will disavow that I am even a minister. So he came over in the boat, and that's a long story which I won't get into, but essentially you had a universalist miracle. Does anybody know this story? It's an awesome story. I would ask you to look that up. But they shipwrecked on a guy named Thomas Potter's farm, who had built a chapel expressly praying that someone would come and preach universalism there. And Murray, of course, disavowed any of this, and over time, eventually, he was sweating in the night and praying, and God was going, hey, I think you're the man. So he ended up doing it, and he ended up becoming the founder of universalism in America, one of the biggest evangelists for universalism in our country. It put universalism on the map. And furthermore, George Washington chose him to be a chaplain in the Revolutionary War. So this is our spiritual DNA. Now I want to take you over to Czechoslovakia, to a man named Reverend Norbert Čapek, who was a Baptist minister, and he became disgruntled with his faith, and he was in a lot of turmoil and wrestling and struggle, and knew that he wanted to find something different to express his ministry in. And so, over time, he learned about the Unitarian faith. And he came over to Boston, and he got with the people, the Unitarian folks there in Boston, and they commiserated, and they decided they would help him out. He went back to Prague. He went back to Czechoslovakia. There was no Unitarian church there at the time. He founded the Unitarian Church there. Over time, he had the largest Unitarian church in the world of 3,200 people, and some 8,000 Czechs would identify themselves as Unitarians because of the faith of one man. And in the 1940s, as the Nazis began to invade, and Čapek taught, as we said in our affirmation, who taught the radical worth and dignity of every human being, there would be officers sitting in the back row. And they would warn him, you will not preach this anymore. And the people in Boston begged him to come back, but he said, no, I am called to be here with my people. And in 1942, in Dachau, Reverend Norbert Čapek gave his life for this faith and for the dignity of every human soul. This is our heritage. This is our spiritual DNA. Now I want to take you out to the western frontier, Iowa. That was the Western frontier back in the late 1800s. And there's an awesome book called The Prophetic Sisterhood. And there are all these Unitarian women who went out there basically to plant these churches out on the Western frontier. And as I was giving this sermon a couple of years ago, someone told me, and I didn't dawn on me, but it makes sense. She says, do you know why, Chuck? Do you know why all these women were out there? Because all the Boston Brahmins, all the Boston preachers, all the men preachers, they didn't want to go out there to the Western frontier. They wanted to stay in their comfortable churches in Boston and sound off and get a nice salary and get a housing allowance. But it was the women who had the courage to do this. So there were two ministers named Eleanor Gordon and Reverend Mary Safford. They had they preached in three congregations, and they established seven other congregations in that area. And they became all financially self-supporting. And you know what they said? Our goal, our mission is to bring enlightened religion to Iowa. Wouldn't that be a great bumper sticker for us? We want to bring enlightened religion to Texas, to Midland County, to Odessa. And Reverend Mary Safford was named chaplain of the Senate in Iowa. This is our spiritual DNA. And finally, I want to take you back to Boston to a man named Reverend Theodore Parker. He was kind of the second wave of transcendentalism after Emerson. And what Parker did was he basically articulated a spirituality and a religion that integrated democracy and spirituality. Now, he had 3,000 people in his congregation. It was the largest free church in the nation and the largest church of any kind in Boston. He was a circuit riding preacher as well. He would travel all the way up from Maine over to Illinois. Some 50,000 people would hear him preach. He would write sermons that would be sold. I mean, I don't know a single minister of any stripe right now that could get out on the, you know, will sell a sermon for food. I think that minister might go hungry. Might look like me, see? I might not have much meat on the bones. But yet Parker was such a well-known person. And you may recognize these lines. You know that president had that long hat? What was his name? Yeah, that's it. Lincoln, yeah. Do you know one of the most famous speeches in the world is called the Gettysburg Address, right? How many of you memorized that when you were kids? I did. 87 years ago, that's as far as I can get. But I remember memorizing that. And people all over the world know that speech. It's one of the most famous speeches in the world. Do you know that the way he ended that speech, where he got the line, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, he got that from Theodore Parker. And I actually have looked up the original sermons and read the original sermons where Parker said that, and that's where Lincoln got it. Furthermore, Reverend King quoted Reverend Parker, "The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice." Now, are you aware that there is a rug in the Oval Office that has quotes on it that President Obama admires? Two of those quotes are from Theodore Parker, "The government of the people, by the people, and for the people," and the one about the moral arc of the universe. Now, he has that as a quote from King. And I say, we get on a bus and we go to D.C. and we say, We're not leaving here until you get the right person on that rug who said that originally. Well, that's a justice issue. So this is our spiritual DNA. We are not people who just want to be around like-minded people. We're not people who just want to seek a safe harbor. Again, those are important things. They're vital things. They're only a starting point. Our DNA is to get out with courage and with bravery, even to the point, if you're so called, to risk your very life and to give your very life for the principles that you believe in and that our faith calls us to hold dear, even to that extent. That is the nature of our faith as Unitarian Universalists. That is our spiritual DNA. And that's why we have organized the Texas Unitarian Universalist Justice Ministry. I put out there on the table there our brochure and our accomplishment sheet. I do want to share one accomplishment with you before I close. There was a woman named Solma Franco from Guatemala. She was an LGBTQ activist. She fled that country, literally one of the people who gets on the top of the train and risks her life and risks being sexually assaulted and risks being thrown off that thing by people who want money from her if she didn't give it to them. She made it here. She was working. She was seeking asylum here. And her lawyer did not file the proper paperwork. And so she gets a summons that she's going to be deported. And of course, she had a food truck. She and her partner had a food truck there running there in the Austin area. I'm so proud to say that the First Unitarian Church of Austin took her into sanctuary, got another lawyer, got the paperwork going again, and then the ICE people said, you have to come in person to San Antonio to make your case. What does that sound like? Yeah, I ain't too smart, but that sounded like a trap to me. Here's what happened. We had her ministers, other ministers of faith, other people of good heart and good spirit. We went down there with her to the ICE office. We had cameras there. We had press releases there. We had about 50 people that met us there. We called the person who was the head of the ICE office and said, we want you to come out and look us in the eye and say, we are not going to deport her. We're going to process her papers. He said, that's against our policy. Shocking. So the minister said, her minister said, would you meet us at the front door and look us in the eye and tell us, as people of faith, that you are not going to deport her? He said, yes, I will. He came out. He looked them in the eye. He said that. He took them through. They didn't have to go through the metal detector. He took them straight upstairs. She was supposed to get a six-month stay. He gave them a one-year stay. And now Selma Franco is a free person. I just found out about 2 weeks ago. She's received her asylum here in the United States. That would not have happened had not people of faith like us been true to our spiritual DNA. So that's who we are. And so I want to encourage you not only to be a part of our justice ministry, we have 33 congregations from across this state who are banding together. We're going to have our second Legislative Action Day on February 15th, the day after Valentine's Day. We're going to show our love for our legislators when we go down there. We're going to write them Valentines and let them know, hey, what is it you really love? Here's what we love. So I want to close with what Reverend Parker said. And it's amazing how these words of these faithful and courageous Unitarians and Universalists resound even today. He said, why talk forever? Now is the time to push and be active. The times will never be better until we make the times better. Amen.